Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
The fallout continues for Alphabet. The stock is now negative for this year as more controversies around its AI model Gemini rollout mount. Some are calling for a change in leadership. It is Tuesday, February 27th. Welcome to the Tech Check Podcast. I'm Deirdre Bosa with Mark Gilbert. Hey, Mark.
What's up, Dee? How are you? We are on day two of this story together, a story we've been talking about, honestly, a lot this year and a lot for the past year and a half.
I was going to say, is it day two or is it like day 300?
Yeah, exactly. Of sort of talking about this. I mean, it's sort of crystallized in the last few days, but it's sort of been a slow motion, train wreck, which has been the rollout of Gemini and sort of the flawed release of some of these sort of half-baked products. What I will say is that's no different than ChatGPT, right? Which launched and then there was, all of these stories about the different things that the different problems with it and the different crazy things you could get it to say and the hallucinations that it was having.
The problem between ChatGPT, or the difference rather between OpenAI and Google, is that it feels like one stumble after another for Google, like from that first Bard demo to now this Gemini rollout.
Yeah.
And that I think is what's been like building and piling on top of its problems.
Totally. And OpenAI gets to sort of, come from this place of like, oh, we're a startup, right? Even though it has some very wealthy backers like Microsoft, it comes from this place of we're a startup coming out with a new product. Whereas when Google puts out a product, it's like, why isn't this more polished? You are, one of the biggest companies in the world.
Google doesn't do itself any favors either, because its whole strategy has been cautious, responsible AI. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then when you think about the magnitude of the botching the Gemini release, right? Basically, they tried to be too politically correct and they ended up going too far and not making cut and dry claims on Nazis and Hitler, right? Yeah. Just going too far and allowing too much room for conversation for things that shouldn't. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of, there's something ironic right in there, which is that in Google's attempt to make sure that its chatbots sort of don't get into trouble and don't cause controversy, that's what's making them cause controversy, is because they can't sort of make declarative things like, famously, the example that's been going around the internet, which is that someone asked, who's worse, Hitler or Elon Musk, and Gemini is sort of unwilling to come down on one side of what seems to be
to be nuanced when there's no nuance needed for something, for a question like that.
Exactly.
And so it was kind of like inevitable. And it's not the first time we've seen this, right? The attention coming to management, as it should, Sundar Pichai in particular, as the CEO, who is soft-spoken, who's cautious, who's careful. And remember too, like post-pandemic, when all the other tech companies were making these cuts and trying to be efficient really quickly, and he had more of a slower approach. And this question arose, is he a good wartime CEO? Like when things are good, when rates are low, when all these companies are humming and growth is good, he's great. But when you have real challenges ahead, is he the right person for the job?
Right. And so and something you're looking at today, which I thought was interesting, which I had not thought of at all, is that while much of the intention from media and from investors and from analysts has focused on the CEO, Sundar Pichai, you've also been looking at another key person who we think sort of deserves some attention.
Yeah. And that would be Google's search chief, a man named Prabhakar Raghavan. He's a well-known figure in tech circles. He's been leading Google search for a while now. But he's also, in the last few years, been at the forefront of the company's generative AI announcements, demos, and most recently, apologies. I thought it was really interesting how the blog post regarding the botched rollout of the Gemini image generator came from him. I mean, you could question, why doesn't it come from Sundar Pichai himself? But also, why isn't it coming from someone who is heading up generative AI efforts? But then there's another side of this. And I just thought it was so fascinating to look at him, because what does it say about the AI strategy? Now, first, it's perhaps notable that Pichai himself hasn't taken the lead in a way that, say, Satya Nadella and Sam Altman have. But that's not exactly his style. We talked about that. He likes to bring other people up. He likes to sort of distribute the announcements and so on. But he's not like distributing it among Google's AI superstars. He's putting the head of search, the current business, in charge.
Right.
And there's you know, like a big talent pool to choose from. And so I just wonder, does that suggest something broader? Google can't let go of search. And that is like the existential fear.
The existential question that Google right now is facing. And I think, you know, you bring up that point that that's not Sundar Pichai's style. He is not the spokesperson for this company. He doesn't do a ton of press. He's not out there on social media, you know, capturing the sort of public ethos around his company. And look, you can say that's a good thing, right? You don't want a sort of showboating CEO. But then again, you know, when you want to make a big splashy marketing announcements and, you know, enter into a space in a big way, you've got Mark Zuckerberg or Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk, you know, all, by the way, white men who are out there and, you know, in pop culture and who are able to sort of like create some attention around themselves and some new product in a way that I do not think you could say Sundar Pichai is prepared to do and has done at all.
Right. And even, well, first of all, keep in mind that these are consumer facing products. So you need to get people and interested in them. And no one has better distribution and data than Google. So they should be able to harness their advantages already. And I will make the comparison to Satya Nadella. We've seen a different kind of Satya Nadella since, you know, the generative AI cycle came underway. He has put himself out there. He has been more bombastic, more personality, more everything. I go back to the idea early on when he said, I'm going to make Google dance.
Totally.
That was kind of like a wow moment that I still think
totally.
About.
And
that
I remember watching him talk to Kara Swisher at Recode, whatever that was, like 2 years ago, and thinking, wow, this is a different Satya Nadella. This is a really comfortable in, you know, public speaking role, like sort of commanding thought leader presence. And that is this is a different Satya Nadella than took over, you know, just in terms of optics, then took over the company from Steve Ballmer.
And it's not that Sundar Pichai has not been out there. Like, he has. He did, you know, some press around the Gemini release, but it just gets kind of like diluted. And also, we've talked in the past about how it was only recently Gemini. It was Bard, and that was a botched demo, and it's gone through all these iterations. So the messaging isn't exactly clear. And then it's also not clear when you have Prabhakar Raghavan leading this charge, right? Like, yes, he is extremely well-respected in academia and tech. That is undeniably true. He's been at Google for more than a decade. He assumed control of search engine and related businesses in 2020. But is he the right person for this? He kind of represents the current and maybe the traditional or old or legacy business of search. Who represents the next one? And I found this Times profile that he did late last year. And I thought this was so funny. He acknowledged that Google needs to stay relevant. So he knew this was coming. And he's been obviously thinking about this for a long time. He knows that search is, you know, one of the most incredible businesses of all time, but they still need to work hard to keep that position. And he said that he was unfortunately aware of a nickname among young people, Grandpa Google. Mark,
that's
wasn't
a brutal
even aware
nickname.
Of that nickname. Like, I understand the connotation right away, but I did not know that. And that is just so rough.
Yeah. And Alphabet has been trying hard in recent years to shake off that reputation, right? The place where engineers to go to, quote, rest and vest, which means, you know, stay and you know, after having a good career and building some sort of reputation, they get a job at Google, and then they just basically don't work very hard and vest, wait, you know, the 4 years until their shares vest. You know, I'm personally just doing a rewatch of Silicon Valley on HBO, and Hulu is like the big company that's sort of compared to Google. And, you know, this is a show that was starts in 2014, and they're already talking about rest and vest, and that's already the big joke about Hulu and some of these big tech companies, and that's 10 years ago. So, you know, Grandpa Google has only gotten older in the last decade.
And you think about Google, it's not even that old. I mean, Microsoft and Satya Nadella have done an incredible job of reinventing that company. And this is what Sundar Pichai was supposed to do. And I know we're going to get to the other side of this, Mark, how Sundar Pichai, you can see him as doing a really fantastic job. This is still one of the biggest companies in the world. But I mean, the fact that you relate it to Hulu, that could be a stand-in from Silicon Valley for another company, but it's just blatantly Google. You think about how the mega caps have changed, right? And Zuckerberg is like what I think is maybe one of the best examples. Another CEO who didn't particularly care that much what Wall Street said. He just wanted to keep his head down and create and ship new products. But over the last year plus, he's leaned into this narrative and communicated a lot more clearly with the street.
I mean, remember, you know, around the Facebook roadshow, it was like Mark Zuckerberg wearing his hoodie and like didn't want to talk to investors. And, you know, I think you can very easily make the through line to Mark Zuckerberg having much more of a like a personal presence online. There's a lot more like photographs of him. He does more interviews. He engages more.
Did you see today's photo?
I saw today's photo of him in a McDonald's in
fur coat and some sunglasses. I think it was a McDonald's.
Yeah, he's
in
on
Asia
vacation
somewhere. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
But okay, the point of this though is that we've been talking about Google for a long time. Is it nimble enough? Can it still ship really innovative, interesting products that people want to use? But there's also this idea of brain drain, right? And that has persisted in this AI age. At least we're seeing the beginnings of it, right? And I don't want to like overstate this because this is always going to happen at mature companies, but top AI talent, they are sort of going on to create their own ventures. Among them, 4 of 36 lead Gemini developers. That's something that The Information reported recently. And, you know, it's just, you see them kind of going, and I've talked to a few CEOs now who have told me that Google offers these like gigantic pay packages, like $20 million over 4 years. And that's what they have to do to retain that talent, where some of the buzzier, newer generative AI startups, they say, hey, come work with us. We're going to be actually working on AGI, you know, like the holy grail of artificial intelligence. That's artificial general intelligence. And that can be sometimes a more appealing proposition for engineers than rest and invest, even if you are getting paid a lot of money.
Right. Yeah. So there's the, you know, there's the rest invest aspect. There's the, you know, young, hungry founders who are leaving Google or basically not taking jobs at Google to start their own companies. And then the big thing I've been harping on to you privately and talking about sometimes on this podcast is, you know, despite many attempts of Google to come up with new products over the last basically 20 years and a lot of under, you know, Sundar Pichai's legacy, to come up with new products around messaging, around social media, around enterprise, around payments, they have not taken off, right? I mean, you know, Google's tried a half dozen different messaging apps, you know, from Duo to Hangouts to Google Meet, and they're always getting rebranded. Social media, remember Google Plus, you know.
I forgot about that until I read it. And a lot of these, actually, there's this fantastic website that our producer, Jasmine, found. What is it called? It's like...
Oh, yeah. What is it? Killed by Tech.
Products killed by tech.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it lists like the different products that the big mega caps that have been killed off. And Google is just like far and away the biggest number, which also means, though, that it's not afraid to try new
It's not afraid to try things. It's not afraid to shut down something that's not working, which isn't always a bad thing. But, you know, when you do see something like I follow this guy, Tom Guerra, on Threads and Twitter, and he's been just making fun of the Google Wallet rebrand recently. And it's just like, you know, this is something that Google Wallet used to be Google Pay, which used to be Android Pay, and now it's becoming Google Wallet again. It's just confusing for consumers. And it's sort of the same thing for you know, from Bard to Duet to Gemini to Enterprise Gemini for Workspace. Like, it's just, these are really complicated rebrands, and it has not been clear for consumers what Google's new big powerful products are. Versus, you know, think about all the products that came from 20 years ago, Google Search, Gmail, YouTube. It's like very clear what those
Android
are. Android
is what we mentioned. And I also think that this moment is different, right? It's fine to try new things like over the last 10 years. But when it comes to generative AI, the stakes are just so huge. I mean, last week we talked about the trillions of dollars in opportunity here. And so you need your messaging to be super clear. And it makes you wonder, like, has Google learned from all of these product relaunches and rebranding, et cetera? Why didn't they just do this from the beginning? Why didn't they just have one AI product?
Right. And so we promised that we would do the flip side. I think the flip side is very clear, which is sort of to look at the huge list of accomplishments that Sundar Pichai and the whole team have accomplished. You know, they truly did pioneer AI and sort of built the entire framework that this has been on. They have successfully managed Google Search and YouTube and, you know, Gmail and all of these huge businesses, Google
Maps,
not
just managed, Android. But grown.
Yeah. They're huge monster businesses. And then Bernstein's Mark Schmulek wrote this note this morning, which called it sort of a hermit approach and said that it has worked, quote, perfectly well for a company that seemingly cares more about running the business than endearing themselves to investors. So basically, Google puts its heads down, is, you know, is not kind of has like cryptic, not very informative, not very entertaining conference calls, but that's worked for the past, you know, couple decades as a public company.
And you can imagine like Jeff Bezos saying something similar. They're not there for the customer.
Yeah.
And I think that has changed the interesting thing though, that has changed at the mega caps. Like Amazon is speaking a lot more. Andy Jassy speaks a lot more to us, to Wall Street, than Bezos ever did. Zuckerberg, yep, we talked about, has made this big turn and it's benefited
Satya Nadella
them because
has. I mean, even someone, totally, even this is a smaller scare, but like think about Evan Spiegel at Snap, right? Didn't talk to the press on IPO day, was famously very shy. Now he's out there doing interviews, doing podcasts, like very in touch, comes on CNBC, you know, I don't know, just like a sort of different turn from Silicon Valley.
And of course, like us on the media side are going to argue that that's a good thing. But I truly, truly believe that the getting your message out, packaging it yourself versus letting the media like go on limited information is generally a good thing, unless you're trying to hide something. And that's always sort of like what comes up for investors. Like, why aren't you talking? Why aren't you getting your message out there? Because it's muddled, maybe. And that's what we've seen from Gemini. So I would love for someone to tell us like what's going on, what do they envision, and how are they going to
also it's high risk, high reward, right? Steve Jobs famously, right, very cryptic, did Apple had this, you know, policy of not communicating, and they would just put, you know, it was like once a year they would have that big event and they would just put out hit after hit, right? And it was like,
yeah,
you know, the iPod and the iMac and the iPhone, and there were just these sort of like incredible run of successful products. Well, you know, yeah, they didn't have a stumble, right? So it works. Yeah. It works if you're always sort of hitting home runs.
Yeah,
it's the when you make a stumble and then you turn around and you say, ah, why are we getting criticized? And it's like, all right, well, you know, you weren't communicating a lot. So, you know, when you have a stumble, then you don't have a lot of, don't have a lot of transparency to fall back on.
So the other thing I would like to say, though, is that when we talk, and today there's been a big narrative around in the last few days, like, should Sundar Pichai be CEO of this company? But I do want to note that I'm not hearing this from serious big investors in Alphabet. We're hearing this on social media, right? Like, I don't know about you, but my Twitter or X 100% feed is full of these questions. But then you look and they're like, you know, kind of random people, kind of people who make money,
whose business model is sort of being a bit.
Exactly.
Yeah, bombastic. I mean, the one sort of serious person that you and I talked about was Ben Thompson of Strategery, who is a very serious, well-regarded journalist. And yesterday he sort of had this idea that, you know, management up to and including Sundar Pichai should be responsible for some of these failures.
And he doesn't say that lightly, but end of the day, he's still a journalist.
We haven't heard from big fund managers who own a lot of Google. Yes.
So I keep reaching out to, I feel like I'm like stalking them at this point, but TCI, this is the activist fund that told Google to get fit. Remember they wrote that letter back in 2022.
Yeah, told them to cut costs and, you know, take the business more seriously.
And I'm so like there, I think at the time they had like a $6 billion stake in Alphabet. I don't know what that is right now, but I would be interested to hear from them. Not necessarily like something as big as like, should Sundar Pichai be CEO? That's not really, you know, that's a question, but it's not the question. And I would like to know if they think that he's made progress on some of these really laid out points that they made a few years ago, like don't hire as much, reduce your workforce, scale back on other bets that are losing money, which, you know, he has made some progress on. So I would be interested to hear if that investor has seen progress, but also, you know, like any other large investor, their view of what's going on, because it's a lot of like commentators and posters and so on so far.
Yeah. Let me sort of just throw out another idea right at the end here. This is a long podcast, D.
There's lots to talk about.
Let me throw out another idea here, which is that, and here's some of the flip side and playing devil's advocate. One, what has Sundar Pichai actually done at Google, especially before he was CEO? He was responsible for Chrome, which is not a product that we talk about a lot, but Chrome was founded, you know, I think less than two decades ago and is now the dominant browser.
Undeniably.
And there's no reason why it needed to be. You know, like Safari is built into iPhones.
Great point.
The other thing that he managed at Google was Google Drive, which and the whole Google suite of like services like that is very successful. And that has been a big success. So those are two things that he managed at Google before he was CEO. And then also he took ownership of Android, which has been a huge success.
Yeah.
So before he was CEO, he was this sort of like rock star, and now he's been named CEO. And the last thing I would say on the devil's advocate piece, and the reason maybe we're not, you know, hearing these calls from a huge fund like TCI, is that the stock is still near all-time highs. It's a couple points away, right? Yes, it's mm-hmm. down today and yesterday. It's, you know, maybe underachieved the last couple weeks, but this is still a stock that's near all-time highs. This is not like Meta, you know, having a 70% drawdown, or Netflix shares cratering, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of 2021. This is a company that's still doing very well by investors.
Right. Although I will say, seeing that it's negative on the year, I know it's just like a random point in time though, but is this the start of like its down year like we saw with Meta? And in that case, it's interesting. That case, Zuckerberg could not be replaced. He holds the voting power.
Right. Yeah.
And he sort of did that transition on his own. So will investors give Sundar Pichai the time if they think that he needs it to turn around this business, or will they get someone else in? And to your point about the successes that Sundar Pichai has had, which is undeniable, maybe he's better in the trenches, right?
Yeah.
Maybe he's better actually working on this stuff. Maybe he
need a
should
big
head
public
up
facing CEO in 2024. I don't know if you do. I really don't
wartime
know.
Wartime CEO, right? I don't know. It's such a thing that we throw out there every time a company or every time the macro environment gets tough. But it's still a good question. Do you need a wartime CEO? And is Sundar Pichai, we've made the argument that maybe he is, that his style is different, but still effective. And the last thing I'll say, Mark, I know this is like our longest podcast yet. We're going to do this for our weekly. So maybe like we can leave it there. We're going to look at all of this and we're going to package it up really nicely for our audience.
Yeah, maybe sort of solve some of these questions that we're raising in the next couple of days. So we'll post that on Friday.
Yeah, sounds good. See you tomorrow, dude.
While no one knows what tomorrow may bring, Bridgestone is working toward a more positive outlook. With innovations like developing a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials. It's just one of the many ways Bridgestone is making a difference today for generations to come. Because that's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.